Renegade Revolution.
The future of radio.
You're weak. Unsure of yourself.
Actually,
the fact that you possess a sense of morality and we do not gives us an evolutionary advantage.
CyberstationUSA.com.
And if history has proven anything,
there's another problem with TV, believe it or not.
It is that evolution always wins.
Shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Author's Corner on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information, Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, and I'm really excited to welcome the program author of Jackie's Journal and Snub Club, Diane Christensen. Diane, thanks for calling.
Oh, sure. Thank you so much.
We're excited to talk about both books, and I see it's for definitely for middle readers, but tell us a little bit about your background, Diane, and then we'll get right to the interview.
Well, I have a degree in biology, and I worked at a university level doing some genetic research, but when it was time for me to start a family, I decided that I would be a stay-at-home mom, and so I really kind of devoted my life to that, and my son Jackie was born, and about the time he was 8 years old, and a little bit before that, maybe a few years before, started to notice that some things were not quite right. He was really latent in several aspects of his development. And so when he was 8 years old, he was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. And so that began kind of my journey with writing books that kind of center around neurological differences, and in particular, autism spectrum disorder.
So it was like once it happened to you, you wanted to say, tell parents you're not alone. You're not alone in this, and that we could speak about these things. We shouldn't be afraid of talking about what's happening, especially if our kids have special needs.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. When he was diagnosed, I had to make the decision, am I going to just be open about this, or am I going to just kind of sweep it under the rug until he's old enough to really understand? And I made the decision early on to use the word autism and to talk about it freely and to not put a negative spin on it, but to just say, you know, this is a part of who you are, and, you know, we're going to celebrate whatever we can, and we're going to fight the battles that we can. And so with that in mind, telling an 8-year-old that they have this neurological difference is, you know, tricky business, really. There's really nothing out there that I found that would help me with that. And so Jackie's Journal is a book that my son actually wrote with me. And it's his journey of what he's gone through and how he sees the world. And we put it together as a therapeutic exercise, but it really turned into something that we can share with other families and other children. And even typical kids can learn about what spectrum disorders look like on a daily basis.
Well, and I think that's great. And I think that to be able to talk about your son and be able to bring up the issues that you've had to go through and the real life struggle, but yet also a tremendous blessing in ways, so that people can understand that they can go through this. They can have a normal life. It's a challenge in so many ways. When you're talking about, again, talking about ASD, they're so different in so many ways. So I'm sure a lot of the story highlights a lot of, basically, Jackie, that what makes him different than other children with ADSD or any children in general, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, it's called a spectrum for a reason, and kids present so differently from one another on the spectrum, but there are a lot of similarities, especially the social game is usually a big issue with kids with ASD, and so we really highlight that a lot, and then sensory issues also, but, you know, it's a wide range, and, you know, our message is really that, you know, Jackie's a kid. He's a kid just like any other kid, and he has the same wants and desires as other kids, but his brain just works differently. That's really what it's about.
And basically, what age is Jackie right now, by the way?
He is 11, and he wrote the book when he was 9 years old.
Okay, and when he was 9 years old, and he's helped you write the book, so basically, he's pretty highly functioning for ASD, correct?
He is. He's highly functioning. He borders between PDD, NOS, and Asperger's. He academically he does fairly well. He excels at math and things like chess, but he has pretty severe sensory issues, and he really struggles with missed social cues and some anger issues.
And it's something that absolutely you have. Each day is a different day. And that's what the book's also going to tell you about. And through his eyes, especially being writing the journal and being involved in this, how many children with ASD have had that opportunity to get to write a book? Not many.
Yeah. And the thing is, it was really therapeutic to do. It really helped us develop a way to communicate, to discuss some of the things that happen in his daily life that he didn't understand, or, there's a chapter about bullies and how his view of bullies is and, what he thinks the perfect bully would be. And he really touches on, there are times when my feelings are hurt, when people make fun of me. But then, there's also times when he does really well in a chess match and he's so proud of that. And so we really wanted to kind of show the depth of that just like any kid, they have the things they're great at, and then they have the things that they struggle with.
Okay, we're talking to Diane Christensen, and I think that being able to bring out his life and for people to see, basically, he's like every other child, yet he has different ways of handling things. Through his eyes and writing this with you, what have you learned from him in this journey?
Wow. I mean, I've learned so much. I think probably the biggest thing that I've had to learn is patience. Because when you have a kid on the spectrum, it just takes so much longer to get to the same point as a typical child. And that's with discipline or just getting him to understand, the way he's misinterpreted a certain situation. And so I've learned that I really need to be patient, and I need to really try to see things through his eyes first and foremost, and try not to get angry and try to just really, help him see things the right way, which is a challenge, a real challenge.
Well, it is an absolute challenge. And in your process in writing this, again, he was part of this. What did you do in general to make sure that this gets done? Because, again, he's involved in this, but what as a mom did you put into this book that other moms that have children with ASD see the same types of things?
Yeah, I think it just was being able to sit down with him on a daily basis and really write down things. And I really took his words, his emotions and his words, I took, and I kind of took that and molded it into how it would fit into a book. But he's got just a real sarcastic sense of humor, and it's strange because half of the time he doesn't even understand it. So he has this tongue-in-cheek kind of humor that plays out in the book, and I kind of helped him use that, in a way that would be for everyone to read, really. But he did all the artwork, and it's really his words most of the time.
How has the ASD community taken to this book?
It's been really great. It's a great thing for the classroom. I've had a lot of educators get very excited about it because it's a way to start a dialogue about neurological differences or even just differences in general. When we brought it into the classroom to talk about it with his peers, many of them had an aha moment like, oh, This is why he's in my face and doesn't understand my personal space. There was a lot of that. And I think in general, you have kids that have ASD and they can read this book and they can say, wow, that's me. I have things about me I can celebrate too. And so it's been really a well-rounded receiving for the book.
Okay, so we got one other book to talk about in this short period of time, but let's go a little bit into Snub Club. And this, this again, is more of the middle reader type book, kind of explaining a lot about kids with special needs again, but also ADHD, correct?
Yeah, this book is really a branch off of Jackie's journal. And what we decided to do was, you know, we wrote this nonfiction book, really. And now it was time to really see what we could do with a work of fiction. And so this book is basically a chapter book, an elementary school chapter book. And the two main characters are my son, Jackie, and his close friend, Cameron. And so it's based on two real boys who struggle with ASD. And the story is about their struggle a little bit. It talks about, you know, what does this look like in school? What does this look like to other kids? What does this look like on a daily basis? But it's blended into a mystery. And the two kids, though they have these struggles and they have these differences, they realize that they also have superpowers because of their autism. So they use these superpowers to solve crimes and to solve mysteries. And that's, you know, really the idea of what we're trying to do is to celebrate those things that make us different and try not to dwell on the negative.
Well, Diane, it's amazing to talk about both books, but I really would love to get into more about this book because I have a lot of questions. So I'll have to contact your publicist and bring you back on Author's Corner to kind of go more into that book. But the question I think is, I think finally there was one other book out there in the middle reader category that I remember reading when I was just started school teaching, and that was Joey Pigza. And this sounds like it, but in a more of a way that's even more creative in a way that's not just almost dialoguing someone with ADHD.
Yeah.
It's talking about something so that kids could say, now I have some heroes to look up to. Now I really can feel good about it. Well, Pigza was more making fun. I don't know if you're familiar with Joey Pigza at all. That was a...
I'm not, but... I love how you say that because it's true. It's really a building up of these kids and just, you know, giving them these superpowers that they really have anyway, you know. So it's great.
Yeah, that book really just ripped on the whole ADHD process. And it was a good book, entertaining, but it didn't show it so that special needs kids would want to pick it up. They would say, no. And there was really nothing that ever would fix the problem. And here they are exciting. It's an adventure. It's something. So I think it really makes you happy. And I'm sure it makes your son happy to have this book as well.
Don't you? It really does. Yeah, it does.
Well, Diane, it's amazing how quickly time flies. And I mean, I could talk to you for 2 to 3 segments, and but we'll definitely get something set up. I'll contact Julie and say, bring back Diane just to talk about SnubHub. I want to go into that Snub Club. I really want to go into that in more detail because I had so many more questions about Jackie's journal because that's just an amazing story. Imagine the whole ASD community getting behind this. And I hopefully through Snub Club, you'll be able to bring back Jackie's journal for even a bigger push. And I think that's why on my national show, you kind of looked at putting both of those out there. But 13 minutes is definitely not enough time. So, Diane, where can we purchase your book and learn more about you?
Oh, well, you can purchase the book at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It's available in Nook and Kindle also. And you can visit Jackie's website at www.jackiejournal.com.
Well, thanks a lot, Diane. You'll be back in a couple of weeks, and I'll make sure I get it set up so we can talk about Snub Club more. All right, so take care.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Author's Corner, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Author's Corner on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information, Twitter, Total Tutor Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And I have the funniest story, and at least Mary has a sense of humor. I fell asleep on the couch. My first time ever, I fell asleep on the couch before I had great authors to interview tonight. And thanks to, again, a go from Visalis, I'm wide awake now, so I want to welcome the program author Mary Plattis. Mary, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're author of Cooking Techniques with Olive Oil. So is this your first cookbook, by the way, Mary? Or have you been writing?
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus Mission USA.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
And visited Greece. I'm of Greek background, and olive oil runs through our veins. So I was interested when we got there, it was olive oil picking season. They were picking and processing olives. So I became an olive oil fanatic. I just love fresh olive oil.
You love it. And how does it make cooking a taste, in your opinion, using olive oil?
Well, it enhances the Mediterranean diet, and that is the diet that, of course, I grew up with and is now the big trend because it's, so healthy for us and it's plant-based. So it just enhances it in many different ways, depending on the type of oil that you use.
And how many people would you say outside of California use olive oil on a regular basis, would you say? Because, you know, especially in the California area, they're definitely are into more and more interesting cuisine compared to I guess, middle America.
Well, you know, we do eat a lot of salads here, but to be fair, there was a survey done by UC Davis recently, and they found out not too many people know that much about olive oil. The survey studied said 25% of the people, that's it, really know that much about olive oil across the board.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't either. So, and basically, I understand the book has lots of recipes and ideas, and specifically, so when you decided to join this journey and said after your visit and said, I'm going to write about olive oil, how many cookbooks are out there that really enhance just olive oil alone and makes it that niche that you've decided to write about?
Well, not that many, and the reason I did it is I go to the Natural Food Show, and I do represent an olive oil company at the show, and I learned by just talking to the people walking by that many people just not only know about good quality extra virgin olive oil, but they don't know what to do with it. So as I was teaching, I teach culinary classes, that was a big question. What do you do with that beautiful bottle of olive oil you get as a gift or you buy at the store for $24?
So what I did
is I wrote cooking techniques because those are the techniques are what many of my students always ask me to repeat. Could you please go back and show us how to saute and marinate and the techniques of cooking? So I put the two together and I came up with this book.
And from there, it's just such a great thing because people have a resource now how to use it. How many people will you see that don't use it correctly, use that cooking agent correctly, in your opinion?
Well, I think they use it correctly. I don't think they use it to its full potential. Right. So most people buy a nice bottle of olive oil and they keep it on their counter and they splash it on vegetables and they splash it on their, you know, salads, and that's about it. And they stop there. And what we are trying to teach is that there's many different methods you can use your olive oil for.
So can you give us an example? We don't want to give away it because I think so many people out there are probably their mouths are watering right now because they do the, they do love olive oil and say, now I can find some new methods. But and so tell us specifically one of the examples of how you use
it. I think the most interesting one is poaching with olive oil. And what that technique is you heat up your olive oil at a very low temperature and you can poach. In our book, we have lamb chops and we have fresh tuna, steaks. We also do chicken, and also tomatoes. And you poach the olive oil. You actually submerge it and put it in the oven. And when it comes out, it is so juicy and so fragrant with the olive oil that you've chosen. That's the technique most people do not know of.
Very, very interesting. And
then we
go ahead. No, go ahead, Mary.
And then we go into braising with olive oil, which is just a very slow cooking method. And we like to use all the meats in there, but also we have a Greek vegetable braising method. So braising with olive oil is fairly new as well to many people. And then we go on to marinating. We also bake with olive oil. That's a surprise to most people.
And also, this being an ebook, it makes it very, very simple just to get the iPad out or your iPhone and start reading it and find certain recipes and just get cooking, right?
That's right. And we tried to do it so that everybody is satisfied. We have vegetarian recipes. We even put in a raw recipe at the very end of the book. And it was a raw drink that we have, a shot of fresh juices and olive oil.
Wow.
So we try to be a little bit creative. We also teach about olive oil, the history of olive oil, and how to select a good bottle of olive oil, and how to store it as well. So it's quite an informational book as well.
So what has been the response so far of the book?
Well, the response has been fabulous. I must say we just were awarded a Global eBook Award.
Congratulations.
So we are thrilled
That's
to
great.
Death.
Must make you really excited.
Well, we are. It is our first book, and I collaborated with a wonderful food blogger. We're both food bloggers, and we write. We both have sites, and she was my photographer, and she did beautiful photography, and I wrote the recipes.
And from the response of people, they're just saying, "I want to know more." Right, especially after what you gave them is pretty much a tidbit. You probably have more recipes, don't you?
Well, what we're going to do, believe it or not, Neil, is it is coming out in paperback, and we are adding more recipes and chapters to the book.
So I guess you were surprised this quickly of the response, said we got to get out there and get some more opportunities right from the get-go, it sounds like.
That's right.
And so from this process, people asking questions, when they go to your website, especially the blogger, and comment on specific things, what are you hearing most about? They're just so surprised, as you've talked about before, of how they were not using olive oil to enhance the flavor the best, were they? And now they're like, wow, I can really do this.
Well, I think the biggest response I've gotten, which is a surprise to both of us, is the fact there's such a controversy right now in California and worldwide on olive oil, and it's the controversy that they're asking us about, and why, what's happening to our olive oil, and why are they taking them off the shelves, and how do you select an olive oil is our number one question.
What is the controversy? I didn't hear about that.
Oh, the controversy is UC Davis did a study a couple years back and found that 80% of the olive oils on the grocery shelf were adulterated. And they added seed oils and nut oils and pomace oil, and these are refined oils. These are not good oils for you. And they are sold as extra virgin olive oil and at a high price. So they're pulling those off the shelf now. And they're asking, most of our customers are asking us, so what do we look for in a good bottle of olive oil?
So you're becoming that expert in figuring that
out. So now we're shopping with our customers in grocery stores and helping them select an olive oil. But I do have three tips. One tip is make sure that you see seals on your olive oil, either from organic seals or from the IOOC, which is the International Olive Oil Commission. and seals from the California Olive Oil Commission. These seals will tell you that it is pure extra virgin olive oil. And please, only buy extra virgin olive oil. Do not buy pure olive oil or virgin.
Well, absolutely. And when you do, if you don't, then it's not healthy enough for you, and you're really missing out on the benefits of it, right?
Yeah, the benefits are the polyphenols are a very high content in extra virgin olive oil, which are, you know, which has proven to reduce heart disease, diabetes. There's many studies done on olive oil.
And what do you think your ultimate goal with the book, and I guess the more books you're going to get to write, what is your ultimate goal with this?
Well, my goal is not to write trendy books. My goal was to write a book that will stay on the shelf for a long time and people can constantly go to. It's a single subject book, and I want it to be a reference book for private chefs and people who enjoy cooking, as well as culinary teachers, to use on a daily basis. So in the future, I would like to write more books using cooking techniques with vegetables, cooking techniques, you know, with other single subject items in the kitchen that most people do not know how to work with. So hopefully maybe a series. Who knows?
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed, and it's fantastic, the success and what you're doing in so many ways. So where can our listeners, first of all, go ahead and check out and purchase your book, but also to kind of follow your blogging and your co-author's blogging?
I write a blog called CaliforniaGreekGirl.com. And it's all Greek recipes, Mediterranean recipes, traditional, as well as new California-inspired recipes. My photographer, Laura Bouchard, writes FamilySpice.com. These are family recipes with a Persian, Iranian twist to them. And so now you can see why we get along so well. We both love to eat.
And love to eat and love to write and love to cook.
Right. And all you have to do is go to our blog site, and you can select the button where it will take you to Amazon, and you can purchase the book.
Well, best of luck with the continued success of the book, and I think especially being a teacher and now getting to firsthand say, hey, here's some of my ideas, and check out the book as well. And if you aren't able to take a class of mine, you can always purchase that book or read the blog. So I appreciate you calling, Mary, staying up with me tonight, and at least you got to stay up, so now you can go to sleep after a long day, and someday my day will be over, but good talking to you, Mary.
Oh, thank you, Neil, and look me up when you come to California.
Oh, I definitely will, and definitely maybe we'll check you out. So take care.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. You're Bye-bye. Listening to Author's Corner, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Author's Corner on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information, Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, and I'm really, really excited to welcome the program, Zachary Kotler, author of Ghost at the Loom and House with a Dark Sky Roof. Zachary, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Well, fantastic. Tell us a little bit about your background, Zachary, then we'll get right into the books.
Okay. I'm from California. My book takes place in California and Europe and a few other places briefly. And I was educated in New York and Iowa. My childhood's a big part of the book. So I grew up in Marin County. A lot of the book takes place, a lot of Ghosts at the Loom, the book coming out, takes place in a sort of fictionalized, or maybe not too fictionalized, Northern California, like just north of San Francisco terrain, the gold grass and all the spread out oak trees.
Quite interesting. And from, I guess, looking at specifically writing this book, looking back at your childhood, a lot of fond memories, would you say, Zachary?
Well, that's hard to answer. So the book... Actually, let me start this way. It's my whole creed, I think, as a writer, that written literature in the classical sense from Beowulf onward isn't dead, but is really venerable at this point. It's approaching its end, And I think the end of this is some combination of diminished attention spans, popular media, like blurring what was once called high and low culture.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
And then I think that will eventually be exacerbated by increased attention span, increased mental powers conveyed by future technologies. I don't know, brain implants, genetic manipulation, something like that, something that we really can't think about right now. But I think if you mix all this up with the ebook revolution and all these things, you get a basically sort of elegiac tone toward literature right now. And so do you think I'm probably not answering the question about my childhood, but I am, because everything I'm writing is elegiac. I feel like this art form is ending, and so this book is an elegy for my childhood and my sister, and it's also, I think, an elegy for the 19th century, or at least maybe the way someone now, especially an American person, thinks about 19th century romantic poetry, England, Italy. You think about these things, you have no direct access to them, and you think about them like some sort of childhood of the culture that you are an inheritor of, but you never quite had. And so, you know, I think Ghost at the Loom is about trying to elegize that and access that. But so to answer your question, do I have fond memories of my childhood? I don't know, because you could say it's quite sad. You could say that the 19th century was full of people who suffered horribly and other people who were aristocratic and sheltered, and you remember it in a sort of romantic sense, and I think that's how I remember my childhood, and that's what this book is.
Well, I understand, Zachary, and I see exactly where we're going on this. Basically, you believe the art form of poetry is dying, 19th century type poetry, and that we're going into the 21st century where really things in the arts of writing have changed, right?
Absolutely. I think that's what the novel's about. I mean, you've got one character who's completely 21st century and another one who is really lost in his own childhood and in the 19th century.
Interesting. And when we're talking about the 21st century, what frustrates you the most about 21st century writing?
A glibness, a lack of grandeur.
Ah, okay. And can you elaborate on the lack of grandeur?
I think that we've become very traumatized. I think that even for someone to listen to what I'm saying right now, there may be a smirk on half the faces, because what I'm saying sounds very earnest. And I think the earnest in any vocal exchange, even if I'm, my voice in my writing, my voice to you right now, I think the hyper earnest is considered suspect, basically, at this point. But I think that grandeur actually does come out of a certain earnestness.
Absolutely. And it's something, let me go and think of 21st century. You think the lack of creativity in the 21st century writer in certain aspects?
Well, I mean, I don't want to draw generalizations, because there's a lot of great work going on. I actually edit an anthology. It's the Winter Anthology. It's winteranthology.com. I mean, I collect stuff there that I think is grand, and I think it's, I really don't want to generalize about 21st century writing, because I'm actually hopeful about 21st century writing. But the reason I'm hopeful about it is because I think people are starting to recognize that something really old is ending, or that there's some sort of dire lateness in the zeitgeist, and that this is a sort of inspiration in and of itself. I think there are people who are ignoring that, and there are people who aren't. And I think that if you sort of wake up to that zeitgeist, to not the zeitgeist of high culture and pop culture colliding, or the zeitgeist of sarcasm, or fiction about social networking and texting and Facebook and all these kind of things. Sure, that's interesting, and that's part of what's going on in our culture right now, but there's also this tremendous requiem going on in our culture right now, and that's what I'm interested in.
Okay, interesting. So you want, hopefully, there's a hope in this, in a lot of ways, to see that 21st century writing gets back to where the history of writing, remembering
yes,
the greats, the classics.
I'm not getting back. I wouldn't say that I'm excited about literature in the 21st century. What I think is that it is ending, in the sense that, like, oral tradition is over. You don't have Homer and bards, walking down the beach. You have books now, and I think books are ending, and I think literature, in the sense of literary culture, is coming to a close. And I'm not mourning that necessarily, but in as much as I'm sure what's coming is going to be fascinating, and I'm very interested in new media and, the incipient virtual reality and all these things. But in as much as the book on paper still exists, and I and my peers write these books on paper about humans talking to each other and interacting with each other, I think there needs to be some kind of elegiac tone going on right now, because I do think something's ending.
And I mean, I see it firsthand in specific ways. Let's just talk about something that I don't know if you think that I'm on the right track in this, Zachary, that, before it was just published authors, published poets. Now everyone thinks they're a writer. Do you think that hurts this in a process, too, in the 21st century? That there's
I mean, it does, and that's a really long conversation. The positives and negatives of mass democratization, right? I mean, there are tremendous advantages to that and tremendous disadvantages, and, high culture has something exclusive and hierarchic about it, and there's something pernicious about anything exclusive and hierarchic, but maybe there's something pernicious about literature. Maybe we like literature because it's nasty at some level.
Interesting. Again, we're talking to Zachary Kotler about his book, and so from you tell me, you've given me the theme of this, specifically the characters, your sister and yourself and your childhood. What are we seeing in your childhood in more of a poetry sense, correct? This book kind of really just delving into this, not really specifically giving us an answer, right?
Yeah,
So you're asking me to talk about how my actual childhood influenced this book? Because it is a novel.
Yes, yes. Yes.
I think it influenced it. I think my actual childhood is the metaphor I use is the when you're watching an eclipse through a camera obscura. I don't think you can write directly about your own childhood, or probably you shouldn't. You shouldn't do it extremely directly, but if you can set up a camera obscura, I think you can watch the eclipse.
Okay. And so your childhood was delving into a lot of enjoying the classics then, right? It sounds like you're a classics person for sure, right?
I've read a lot of literature. When I was a child, I had a lot of mythology read to me. I have a mother who believes that children should not be exposed to anything that too many other children are exposed to in a stereotypic sense, but that it's okay to be exposed to something more archetypic. So to be more specific, we didn't have television, we didn't have plastic toys, we didn't have video games. We knew about them, we saw them at other children's houses, but we didn't have them around us. And then as soon as we were adults, we did what we wanted to do, but our childhoods were protected from high-speed culture. And I'm interested now in high-speed culture, but not necessarily I'm interested in anything high-speed. I'm interested in games, in multi-user dimensions on the Internet. I'm interested in all these things now, but I don't want to sacrifice the numinous quality that a childhood without popular culture provides.
And do you hope there's a revival? I think that's what it sounds like to me. You hope that there's a revival of the classics and of literature in general and great writing.
Maybe, or maybe a sort of a brief revival, like a flaming out before the end, a sort of a flare, you know, like the green ray when the sun goes down.
Oh, yes.
Something like that. I'm not optimistic, but I'm emotional about it.
I just am very, very interested in this, Zachary, because, again, this point of view is something that people aren't bringing up. And I think that you and a lot of educators out there would agree completely in this work, because what we're seeing in a lot of writing is we're forgetting a lot about detail. We're forgetting about characters. We're forgetting about development. We're just going into something really quickly, not touching upon a lot of issues or certain situations. The themes are not really well thought out in specific aspects. And it's because of our culture, the fast-speed culture. Look at how our kids are writing nowadays in public schools and in Catholic schools and in all schools in general with text messaging and email. There's no real forms of writing in that way. So how are we going to form the great 21st century writers?
I think it's a dangerous time, and I think that this culture of text messaging is an extremely useful technology, but if it replaces, here's how I see this danger here. We haven't yet invented a mixed media discourse that is denser than a paragraph with hypotactic diction, right? Some sort of paragraphic form. If you look at science writing, it's all still done in modern languages, in paragraphs, with extreme attention to clause structure and density of syntax. And so, and that should tell you something about, you know, if the scientists still are relying on English and German and Japanese and Chinese to write their papers, it's scary that the vernacular is letting that go. And some people's argument is, I mean, let's not be atavistic here. I'm not a Luddite. I believe in technology. I love it. I embrace it. But I think that we're actually losing right now the technology of the dense paragraphic voice, because if you, how do I say this, people say, oh, you're just behind the times, you need to get with the tweet, the text, the blog, right, these kind of things, but I don't actually see these things, these don't necessarily reflect in advance, because I don't see them carrying more and faster information. I see them carrying less and faster information.
Well, absolutely. So when we get back, more Zachary Kotler, and we're going to kind of go into specifically enough, a little more of the book, a little more of our, I guess, conversation of how writing's gone, and we'll talk about some of your other works. You're listening to Toll Education Author's Corner, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Author's Corner on the Toll Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information, Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, and I'm with Zachary Kotler. And Zachary is really making me think deeply about this, and I would have never thought this, but I guess with this informational technology and all these different things, let's hope in a lot of ways that teachers out there, especially English literature teachers out there, understand we can't eliminate the classics. We cannot eliminate great writing, and we have to teach others to think more.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
More and more in a more simple way, a more, I guess, 19th century. When we think about 19th century, Zachary, we're thinking of a more, I guess, not fast-paced way, not so, but also so interesting and intriguing way, right?
Sure. I mean, if you're going to, I don't want to think in a 19th century way, because what I'd like to do is think in a 21st century way about my respect for the cultures of previous centuries. I think that a historical sense, I think that one of the main qualities of the educations we get in America right now is an ahistoricity. We exist sort of outside of time. We don't have a sense of what was modern, what came after that, what came before that. Are we contemporary to what? You know, it's a strange situation where most people you speak to don't have an attitude about the time they live in that is articulatable in the context of previous centuries and maybe where we're going.
And how are we going to fix this? You don't think there's any fix?
I'm not going to fix it. I'm not going to fix it. I just see it. No one's going to fix it. This is the avalanche. I'm just writing about it because it interests me and it makes me passionate and frustrated.
Well, I can hear passionate and frustrated because you want to really show the specifically what the difference in literary writing and the difference in certain things and saying, can we get back to a time like this? And how does Facebook go into all this? Are you a fan of Facebook, by the way, Zachary?
I've never had an account, and I'm sure I won't. That's not because I think that a medium of that kind is formally negative. I think it could be very interesting if there were some sort of open source version of that everyone would participate in. But I personally wouldn't sell my personality to a corporation for free.
Interesting. So your belief is in a lot of ways that people are selling their identities just to be on a stage.
Just for a service. And they're selling their identity, if identity exists. They're certainly selling their cultural output, whatever that might be. And they're not selling it for very much. They're kind of giving it away. I mean, we could just have... It's a shame that there isn't some sort of way that everyone's websites could be hooked together in a way that is not controlled by one corporation.
I agree. And you think about it in a lot of ways that we're giving up our whole, I guess, everything about life in certain ways. We think about our technology and how things have changed. We've given up our privacy, but we also...
We're back to the Neil Haley Show in the Total Celebrity segment, and I'm excited to welcome the program Jane Levy of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. Jane, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm doing good.
I'm excited to chat with you, and I watched the trailer, and I think this is going to be a great hit because everyone loves to sing. We sing in the shower, we sing when our favorite song, but I never thought in a million years we could hear other people sing through a conversation. So tell us kind of the premise of the show.
The premise of the show is about a young woman named Zoe Clark who lives in San Francisco, and she works as a coder, and she has a father who is dying of a rare degenerative disease in which he's like slowly losing his ability to speak and to walk, and she's been suffering headaches and she's nervous that she might have the same thing that her dad has. So she goes and she gets an MRI, and in the MRI machine San Francisco suffers an earthquake, and she gets stuck in the machine for a little bit, and the Spotify playlist that was playing over the speakers to try to calm her down goes wild, and she leaves the doctor's appointment and she steps onto the street of San Francisco, and suddenly she can hear everyone's innermost thoughts and feelings, but she hears them through musical numbers.
I think this is crazy because it's going to be, you know, how many people love musical type shows, and this is just a different idea of it. So when you first got pitched this idea, what did you think of it? I mean, I think it's unique, and that's important for a successful show, is have something unique that's different.
Yeah. There is so much that I couldn't have anticipated when I first read the script. You know, musicals are really special. I had an experience the other day on set where we just couldn't figure out what the scene was about. And me and the director and the writer and the other actor were like, but is it about this? But is it about that? And we couldn't crack the code. And then my scene partner sang, because there was a song in the middle of the scene. And after he sang, everything made sense. And we were like, oh, that's what the scene's about. Special working, there's a lot of reasons, but one of them is that it communicates things that we can't communicate just through speaking. And so as an actor, it's been an interesting exercise, acting to a song, or reacting to a song.
Right.
And it's really a joyful experience, I will say. It does something to the molecules in the air. Like, everything shifts after we do a musical number. And I will say, you know, I think most people have experienced this, that endorphins from dancing are a real thing.
So rate your singing if you were going to go on stage and sing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I want to hear that. That's great.
How about this? You can rate my singing after you hear it.
Okay. But would you consider when you were growing up as a kid that you were a singer in that way, when you were going through the whole acting experience as a child and singing? What would you say, was your talent more the acting ever, or were you like being on stage and acting like musicals and stuff like that?
Well, I did musicals as a kid, but mostly because that was the only platform in which I could act in. That was the only thing available to me. I am not tone deaf. I can carry a tune, and I have learned that singing is something that you can, it's like a muscle that you can strengthen. You can actually become a better singer if you practice in the right way and you see, you know, a vocal coach, which I have. But I would definitely not say that I'm a great singer.
Well, that's, but...
But, you know, but maybe...
Go ahead, sorry.
I don't know. Maybe you'll disagree.
See, that. But again, what do you think you're most talented as an actor? What do you think your best strength is?
Wow, that's a hard question.
Is it your ability to make people
I'm
laugh?
Very nervous.
Yeah, that's okay. Is it your ability to make people laugh? Is it your ability and dramatic? Because look at your career. It's spanned in different ways of different characters in so many ways. It's not like you've been typecast one character your whole career.
Right. I guess my ability is like to be willing and able to showcase my faults. And I think in that way, I become human and relatable.
I think that's your character from back even in Suburgatory to now. You see that in your growth as an actor, is that you do show that.
Mm.
You really are human, and that's what people want to see on screen. And especially in this character,
right,
we can see it. We can see your faults. We can see your challenges. And that it is really relatable,
right,
on screen.
Yeah.
And I caught that in our interview. Sorry about that. But what is your hope for the hope for the show in so many ways, Jane? What do you want to see it go?
I hope that people love it. And I hope that we get to keep making it because we're having such a good time.
It's something where you're not like, okay, 15 takes. It's like, oh, fun, I get to hear the song again. And then the songs are in your head all day, right? After work.
Right. That is true. That is quite, that it's been a little bit of torture how deeply embedded these songs get into your psyche.
I know this for a fact, Jane, because I have 6 kids and they sing all the time, and certain songs that I wouldn't want in my head end up in my head, and I'm singing them throughout my day at work in my head. So it really is true.
Yeah.
The idea happens. We, as everyone, has a song in their head at some point in their day to try to get through.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Waiting in line or different things, or you hear this music and you hear the song over and over again. So what's on your playlist? Do you have a playlist right now that you jump to?
Over Christmas, you know, I think Spotify has a really great feature, the radio feature. They somehow, whatever their algorithm is, I always like the songs. So I have been playing like Etta James radio all through Christmas.
Okay. I mean, that's what everyone listens to specifically, and they have their songs. Is there a favorite top 40 song you like to listen to right now that you're all into?
Top 40 song.
Like a hot pop culture song right now that you're hearing all over the place.
I mean, I love all of Ariana Grande's hits. like is that what
that's a great that's a great answer. Yeah, that's great. Okay. All right, so Jane, it's exciting. Everyone needs to tune in January 7th, 10 PM Eastern. They should definitely watch the trailer right now at NBC.com, and they can see what is going to be a really fun show to watch and watch your character sing. And I can't wait to watch, and I appreciate you calling.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care, Jane. Thanks. Okay, bye-bye.
Take care.
You're listening to Neil Haley's show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts, CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio. The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.